Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Tom Waddle in the building. An absolute honor to have Waddle back on the podcast to break down this new look offense. There is so much excitement on this offense. Tommy, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. I'm honored. Am I pinch hitting for the good kid?
Today's Wednesday. You're pinch hitting for J-Mac, who I believe is down in Mexico having a really good time.
I saw the pictures.
Oh, yeah. He's living it up right now.
I'm freezing my ass off here in the northern suburbs, and everyone, Yurko's down playing golf. J-Mac's in the islands. Good for them. Yeah. Look, I think that I would say first and foremost, Pat, thanks for having me. But look, I think that – you know, for a rookie quarterback stepping in to a new environment, I can't imagine that there has been a better environment for the first overall pick in decades. I think we went through this process a while ago, and I think the last time a rather decent team drafted first overall, I think, was when the Rams moved up to draft Jared Goff. But that team wasn't nearly as ready to win as that Colts team that drafted Andrew Luck several years ago. And I think that would be the comparison in terms of teams that are kind of built with the infrastructure that's necessary for a young quarterback to have a chance early on. You know, we had Ryan Poles on our show, Waddle and Sylvie, in the afternoon a couple of weeks ago. And the thing that kind of stayed with me most, Pat, was when Ryan talked about the quarterback position. And I asked him the question, you know, what did you learn from being in Kansas City when you guys went through the process of evaluating Patrick Mahomes, drafting Patrick Mahomes, and then developing Patrick Mahomes? Because people don't see the whole process. I mean, like, talent identification is one aspect of it. And then you got to develop that talent. It doesn't matter if we're talking basketball, baseball, football, whatever the sport is. You know, there's more than one component to finding, you know, long-term success. And the word that Ryan used when we talked to him about it was infrastructure. They learned that you have to have the appropriate infrastructure in place for a young quarterback to really to feel comfortable and thrive. And look, I think you look back over the last 3 years, and that infrastructure did not exist for Justin Fields, specifically in his rookie year and in his second year. His rookie year stepped into, I thought, a horrible situation where Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were trying to win games to hang on to their jobs. You know, the fact that they put him in that Cleveland game with really no complete plan to protect him, I thought was football.
Jason Peters.
Yeah, it was football criminal. And then last year was, you know, look, it was a design teardown, and I thought it was the right decision by the front office, but it was just unfortunate for Justin. So I guess the point I'm making is that as bad as the infrastructure was for Justin, and he was the victim of bad timing, and we've had this conversation a ton, a number of different things that went into why this didn't work. The infrastructure for, let's just assume it's Caleb Williams, is going to be pretty damn good. When you look at, you know, the different diversity in the backfield, guys that can catch passes, guys that can run, guys that can protect, your wide receiving crew. Like, I mean, what rookie quarterback wouldn't want to step into a huddle and see DJ Moore on one side, Keenan Allen on the other side? And maybe if the draft falls in the right direction, a Rome Odunze or a Malik Nabers in that huddle as well, along with Cole Kmet and Gerald. I mean, like, this is a really – they've done a nice job putting the infrastructure in place. Now, I would love to see them do some more – on the offensive line, because I think that, you know, it's something that all young quarterbacks, especially in the interior of that offensive line, you got to be comfortable with. But I give Ryan Poles and his guys a lot of credit for creating that infrastructure. And as I said, you know, part of me is very empathetic for what Justin had to go through. I mean, victim of bad timing. Did he need to play better? No doubt. I mean, that's my opinion. But it just, the table was not set for him. And I think that in a, you know, I mean, it's not perfect, but I would say that if you're a rookie quarterback stepping into a situation, this table's set pretty nice.
No, yeah, 100%. That is what gets me excited and what we got to get into on today's episode, because there's so much that is set here for whoever steps in. We think it's going to be Caleb Williams, but for whoever steps in to succeed, we also want to let you guys know today's episode is brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino of Northern Indiana. Las Vegas-style gaming just 30 minutes from Soldier Field, exit 6, right off I-80-94. All right, Waddle. I got to ask you this, because you mentioned kind of what's being set up here, how the Bears have set things up. What is your expectation now of this offense in year one with a rookie quarterback coming in? Because there's still some things we need to address on the offensive line for sure, but I think maybe you'll probably go through the draft with that. Courtney reported here yesterday that it seems like Ryan Bates is probably going to be the starter, or is in the running to be the starting center for this team. So we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition. But what is your expectation to start things off just with the weapons you have on this team, your minimums that you need to see from this offense next season?
I don't know that you define it by statistics, but like it's the eye test. It's that you're not one dimensional, you're two dimensional. You compromise defenses, you stress defenses out, you make it difficult for them to game plan against you. You show them multiple formations and multiple sets and different guys contribute. Look, I think DJ Moore, I told anybody who would listen, I knew he was a good player. The first moment I saw him step on the field at minicamp, I said, well, there's your best player regardless of position. He's one of your hardest workers. He practices as hard as anyone. He doesn't take plays off. He catches the ball with his hands. He's explosive. He's in and out of his breaks. There's no wasted motion. Like, he's just a fabulous football player. He's going to stress some people out there. He had over 1,300 yards receiving and what was it, 7 or 8 touchdown passes. And then Cole had a lot of production as well. But that was kind of it. So yeah. I think that, you know, while those guys are excellent football players, you need to be able to stress a defense in more than two ways. So I think that my expectation is that you're going to see a balanced offense. You're still going to run the football. That's just, I think you still have to be able to do that. You're going to run the football to open up play action. But my hope is you're going to see a more consistent passing game. It has to be better. Yep. You got to average more than 195 yards per game throwing the football, or you just don't make defenses, you know, worry or work hard enough. So, you know, I my concern or one of the things that I'm interested in seeing is, again, the assumption is it's Caleb Williams. How will he play in a structured offense? Because what he's coming from is basically just snap the ball and then create. I mean, that's what Lincoln Riley has promoted. It's worked for him. That doesn't, in my opinion, that doesn't work consistently in the National Football League because the guys on the other side of the ball are just too good and too fast and too athletic. So can he – I liked his film better in 2022 than I did 2023 because you saw him play on time more. You saw him play more in structure. I think this year – based on what was going on, he probably played too much hero ball and it got him in trouble. So you gotta kind of get back into the mode of playing within the confines of the offense. You don't want to neuter the guy completely, but you got to play within the structure of the offense. So to me, that's what I think I'm looking for, at least from the quarterback position. But think about it as well. We just talked about it a moment ago. The comfort level of a young quarterback, like Keenan Allen is he's a technician. He's like he plays the position, and not to be overly dramatic, but he's an artist.
Yes.
Like, he plays the position different than DJ. And I like that because you don't want a ton of redundancy. Gerald Everett is a different tight end than Cole is. So I think Keenan is going to be where he needs to be in crucial moments. They're going to be layups on third downs because he knows how to get open and he's going to be exactly where he's supposed to be. He's going to be a young quarterback's best friend. I just think it's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be fun to watch what they can do to stress other, you know, opposing defenses.
Yeah, and it's for the first time in Chicago. I'll say in my lifetime, I mean, listen, you played for maybe it was a little different when you were on the team, but like, this is the first time where it felt like you set a quarterback up where it was hard to fail versus setting him up where it's going to be very difficult to succeed. We realistically, our last 6 years of QBs, we've set them up in situations where you went, okay, how the heck is this guy gonna, you know, get the football out when the offensive line is falling over itself, or, you know, when you don't have weapons on the field, when your best weapon is Amir Smith-Marset or Equanimeous St. Brown. And now it's almost like you're bringing a quarterback in. And I was a Justin guy, but like, I'm excited for the fact that we're bringing in a quarterback friendly system for development. I think when I think back to like quarterbacks that we've drafted, my mind went to Rex Grossman because I was like, he was so up and down and more down than up here. Why? Because in college, I think a lot of people forget he was a good quarterback. Yeah. He was a really good. He was like 34 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Good. He had figured, but we didn't have the infrastructure for him to come here and be successful. We also dealt with some injury as well, but didn't have that infrastructure for him to come in here and be successful. So you couldn't nurture that and develop it and let him ease into it. You talk about the difference in systems. I think we have that where Caleb Williams can go, I got to kind of figure this out as I go. But also, this guy's about to hit me and Keenan Allen's running wide open because he's 6'3" and he can catch it anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it benefited Justin Herbert out in Los Angeles with the Chargers. I mean, when you've got Keenan Allen and you've got Everett as a tight end, you've got Austin Ekeler, you got Mike Williams when he's healthy. I don't think there was any doubt that helped him along in his development. Look, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule. I know no one would have said last year that the Houston Texans had the infrastructure for C.J. Stroud to play the way that he did, and he did some. But, you know, that was a historic season by C.J. Stroud. Most guys aren't going to do that. We may find out that either, A, there's a bit of regression from him next year or going forward, or he's just going to be a brilliant player in this league. But what he did this past season with a very moderate group of talented players around him was spectacular. But most guys, even as talented as they are, they need guys around them. And I think that there is stability. Look, I said 1,000 times, Pat, I never confused Luke Getsy with Kyle Shanahan, but I don't think Luke Getsy was the football devil. But he was a first-time play caller, and there are some bumps along the way with an imperfect environment that kind of, I think, hinder the development of a quarterback. That's been eliminated. Like Shane Waldron, again, I can't sit here and tell you he's the second coming of Kyle Shanahan, but he's called plays in the league. He's game plan. He's got experience. And now you've got weapons in that huddle. You've got an offensive coordinator that's been there and done that to a certain degree. So, look, I'm not going to say that they're a Super Bowl, you know, contending team, because I don't think they are. But like, if this team doesn't show dramatic improvement, especially on offense in the 2024 season, I'll be vastly disappointed for sure.
It would be a major surprise. I mean, like, you think about, I was trying to put together like teams that have put a quarterback in this position with the wide receivers and things that they have. I guess San Francisco, right? But like, it was the last pick in the draft. Like, that's kind of the one team that you look at and go, like, it's not for the first pick in the draft though, right? Like, even top 15, right? Like, maybe Pat Mahomes, but he sat his rookie year. That team was built for Alex Smith to succeed, and Pat Mahomes was just that much more amazing, and they were willing to move on. So like, this is a special situation that the Bears are putting a quarterback in. Here's my question to you though. How do you keep everybody involved in this, especially with a young guy coming in that's going to be learning on the fly? Cole Kmet had a nice season last year. DJ Moore and Keenan Allen both had really good seasons. Gerald Everett was a guy that when targeted caught 70% of his passes. How do you keep everybody involved in the offense so that you make sure that you're that deadly offense?
That's the job of the offensive coordinator, to make sure that, you know, week in and week out, you put together a game plan that you know can take advantage of what the opposing defense is doing. And I think it's matchups. I think you use motion. You do a lot of different things. I mean, again, think about if you draft a wide receiver at 9, and you know, there will come a time where Keenan Allen's going to be your 3. DJ will be your 1. This guy eventually will be your 2. And Keenan Allen's going to be your 3. Like, it's up to the offensive coordinator to make sure with motion and formation that Keenan Allen, who's going to be matched up with the third best corner on the other team, is going to eat every Sunday. I mean, like, that's – I would think that Shane Waldron is very excited about the possibilities. But I think that, you know, there's enough to go around. There really is. And when Keenan Allen is the focal point of the offense, it's going to take pressure off of DJ Moore. And when DJ is the focal point, for whatever reason, Keenan's going to find himself in advantageous situations. You can't be predictable. You can't do the same thing over and over, and you can't rely on one or two guys. You got to be able to spread it out. You got to be able to have confidence in everyone. And I think that'll also be an adjustment for Caleb Williams. Like, young quarterbacks lock in on things that make them feel comfortable. Like, you saw that last year with DJ and Justin, and it was a dynamic connection. that you got to make sure that, that Caleb is somebody that sees the entire field and doesn't just lock in on one guy because there's a certain comfort level. So, you know, that's the job of a coach. You got to make sure that that you spread it around and make sure that you don't focus on one or two things.
I think that's the part for me where it's like the biggest question to me isn't the players on the field. The biggest question to me is Shane Waldron, because we saw the tale of two Shane Waldrons out in Seattle, right? We saw the one who was like 12 personnel all day. Let's attack the middle of the field. Let's make sure we get in the run game involved. Let's dominate out here. And then last year, you know, lack of a better term, all the Seattle guys that we've talked to have said, a lot of your concerns that you had with Luke Getsy are similar concerns here with Shane Waldron. But at a minimum, he feels they've all felt like he can develop the quarterback at a high rate. So it's kind of a concern to me on, okay, what kind of Shane Waldron are we going to get? Because he had a ton of weapons out in Seattle. And I think that a lot of them felt that there was a lack in production when trying to utilize those weapons last year. And you had Geno Smith kind of just lock in on guys and do a lot of the things that we were concerned about. Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting lead up to this season, might I say. Let me ask you from the wide receiver perspective, though, what were you seeing that receivers were doing that maybe wasn't allowing them to get the football from Justin, or that Justin was doing that wasn't hitting the receivers that you want to see change coming up into this season?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, this is kind of taking several steps back. The difference between the college game and the NFL game is significant. Open at the NFL level is different than open at the collegiate level. The windows are shorter or smaller. The timing is different. And I mean, you just have to be willing to step back and let it rip. And I think we saw that a little bit at the tail end of last season against the Atlanta Falcons with DJ. And I think there were some moments when we saw that, but you know, you just have to trust that a ball thrown into a tight spot. And that was one of the things, Pat, last year I said, I would have rather seen Justin make some mistakes and throw some interceptions and take some chances versus not take chances. And I think you have to be aggressive. And I don't think the aggression can be taken away from you because you make a few mistakes. I think you got to keep pushing the ball down the field. And I think that's the biggest difference is open in the NFL is different than open at the collegiate level. And I just never thought, first of all, obviously Justin and DJ were on the same page. But if you go back and look at the film, he and Darnell, and I know they were good friends, it just didn't work. You know, Darnell Mooney, I mean, look, the league still likes him. He signed a 3-year, $30 million deal, you know, with the Atlanta Falcons. So it just, for whatever reason, they were never on the same page. I go back and look at some of the plays in the Cleveland game, and there were moments where I was scratching my head saying, like, guys that have worked together for 2-3 years and they're just not on the same page. And sometimes it just doesn't work. But I would just say, like, be aggressive. Like, and that's what I always said about Justin. Trust it. See it. Trust it. Throw it. And there were times, I think, when he was more concerned with not turning the ball over and not making a mistake. And when you're playing in that fashion, I don't think you're going to reach your potential. And I think that was part of his problem. And I do believe towards the I said this against the Falcons game, Pat. I went back and looked at that film, and I think last home game Justin ever played, and I think he finally said, F it. I'm just going to let it rip. And if you go back and watch the film, he did it. That's what he did. Go back to the first drive. First play of the game, he trusts a throw on a slot fade and leaves it out there, and DJ catches it. The next drive, he throws the same play to the left side and DJ's covered, but he allows him to make a catch. The touchdown pass in the corner. There was a deep end that he threw that I only think I saw him throw twice in 3 years in Chicago, where DJ leaned on the corner, created a little bit of space, and Justin threw it before DJ got out of his break. And I was like, where the hell has this been? Like, this is what I wanted to see all along. And yeah, I think there was some reluctance for him to just cut it loose because he was concerned about making mistakes. And the hope is that I'm not asking guys to be reckless, but my hope is that Caleb Williams comes in and plays aggressively, not recklessly, but aggressively, and will allow some of his talented receivers go to make plays and throw it into a tight window, if that's what it's called, you know, he's called to do.
Does that go to the staff to kind of instill the confidence in the QB that, hey, listen, we're not sitting you on the bench if you throw a pick here? Or does that kind of go to maybe more of the mental inside of the head of the quarterback? Because I would think a rookie QB coming in probably has some of the same concerns. I don't want to be the number one overall pick and I leave this game, you know, feeling like I felt in the Notre Dame game where I'm sitting there watching footballs go the wrong direction all day.
Yeah, you know, it's like I always said about cornerbacks. I think you have to say it about quarterbacks as well. You have to have thick skin and a short memory because you're going to make mistakes. I think that I heard Coach Flew say one time, I think, to us on his show, like when Justin came back from the injury, they really focused on, you know, whatever the numbers were, zero turnovers, you know, no sacks.
Yeah, 200 number, yeah.
Yeah, and basically what you're doing is I thought that you were just sucking the aggression out of the player. You focused more on not making mistakes than you were letting the kid thrive. And I think that's, you saw the numbers come down. You saw the sacks go down. You saw some of the things that you were looking to see, but you still didn't see enough of the upside. But again, I think that, you know, I think you got to tell whoever's playing that position, be aggressive.
Yeah.
Won't be reckless, but be aggressive. And again, I go back to the Atlanta game and I think he just said last home game against, you know, that maybe I'll ever play in front of the Soldier Field crowd, and he let it rip. And I think if he had done more of that and not worried about making mistakes, you know, maybe he had a better shot at maintaining his spot here. But I guess the point I'm making is going forward, you can't play this game scared. You just can't. Yeah. I mean, if you see it, throw it, trust it. Like you've played this position most of your life. You're working your ass off in off season and practice. You know what all the concepts are. You know what coverages you're going to get. You know, see it, trust it, and rip it. And if for whatever reason a guy on the other team makes a play, you know, that guy gets paid as well.
Yeah.
So I want to see them be aggressive. I want to see them, you know, do some stuff that makes sense.
And that's my concern too, a lot with Flus and you know, kind of how he's. I don't know if it's just him. I'm sure Luke Getsy probably had more of a say on the whole 200 thing, but the philosophy that we saw so many times last year was just do enough. If you just do enough, we'll win the game. And I think it lost you 2 to 3 games last year because you were like, well, we're up 28 to 3. We did enough. Then all of a sudden you're looking, it's like, wait, it's 28-26. What are we doing here, guys? Like the 200 number to me is like, all right, Justin, go out and score 2 touchdowns. Don't throw any picks. Don't get any sacks. I would hate to see that on Caleb because, all right, I got my 2 touchdowns. I've accomplished my goal today. All right, let's go bigger. Let's do a 400 number. Yeah, can we get 600 out here? Yeah, I mean, like if we're gonna do the numbers thing, don't do 200 because 2 touchdowns isn't enough to win in this NFL anymore. It just isn't.
No, look, you're right about that, and they were playing really good defense, and I think obviously they were trying to win games, and there was questions whether or not Flus was going to come back and who was going to be replaced at the end of the year. So I think there was more concern about W's than it was actually the continued development of a lot of guys, and yep. That's just the nature of the beast in the industry. And look, I my hope is going forward that's not the case. I think, you know, a coaching staff will look at a quarterback and identify the things they think they do well and identify the things they think they don't do well. And they'll eliminate some of the things they think that they don't do well away from the game plan. And I think that there was a feeling inside that building, at least last year, that there was a limited amount that they could really go into the game each and every Sunday with. And you got to, I think you got to open up your, you know, your horizon here and trust. I know he's a rookie, but don't put any guardrails on him to begin with, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like,
give him everything and then rein it in if you have to. But don't coach scared. Don't game plan scared. You're going to spend the first overall pick of the draft on this kid. He can do some wonderful things. Is he a finished product? Absolutely not. But don't bring him in here, in my humble opinion, and you know, and put the governor on him, you know. Yeah. Let him hit the gas. Let's see what he can do. Let's let him work through some mistakes. He's got a support system, you know, in the coaching staff. He's got a support system in the offensive huddle. I'm expecting. And listen, Pat, if they don't play well and I'm going to tell you the same things about him that I would say about Justin. And that's what people don't understand. Like, I'm a Bears fan. You know, I don't care if it's, you know, who it is. I don't care if it's Peter Tom Willis or it's Sid Luckman. If that quarterback can play, he's my favorite quarterback for the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, there will be some leeway and there will be some understanding that rookies are going to make mistakes. But I would say while the infrastructure has improved and will be significantly better for Caleb Williams than it ever was for Justin, I think the bar is going to be set higher too. I think the expectation level because of that improved infrastructure is going to be raised also.
Yeah, and I think that, listen, you were a defense that took the football away at a high rate last year. That's going to help a young quarterback. You've got an offense like, I mean, the closest thing I can think to it, and I think this is a much better version of it, is the 2013 Bears with Alshon and Brandon Marshall and Matt Forte, and I believe Martellus Bennett was on that team. Like, that's the only thing that I can even think is close to that. But you had Mark Trestman at the helm for that one. So, yeah, Lance has told us many times kind of what that was like. You know, a lot of CFL highlights shown in the film room. So
they were, though, Pat. I think his first year, I think they were the number two offense in the league. Like, it went sideways for a number of reasons that Lance, you know, obviously has more insight to than I do. But that offense, at least for the first year of the Trestman era, I mean, we were like, wow, we hadn't seen this in quite some time. So
yeah, the defense did not show up on that one, though. That was a tough year for us as far as that. There was like a fall off a cliff moment with that team, too. That was a tough season for us. But, hey, before we get you up out of here, Waddle, we got to do our road to the draft brought to you by Toyota. Toyota, let's go places. We've got a lot of interesting wide receivers in this draft, and I think that there's a possible opportunity for the Bears to build out not only just an offensive line, but to add some depth to this wide receiving core, seeing as how you got Keenan Allen, who's 32, maybe still got a lot of good football left in him, but you do have to think about the future of this. What are you looking for from a rookie wide receiver on film right now from the college football level that you're like, that's going to translate perfectly to the pros, and who accentuates that right now that you've seen?
Listen, technique is ultra important when you take that step up in class. What you got away with, even as a, you know, uber talented player, at the collegiate level, it gets ramped up. It's a really, you know, it's a come to football Jesus moment real quick in training camp, because, you know, if you're at Ohio State, Marvin Harrison Jr., who is a fabulous player, he probably plays against 2-3 corners a year that are difference makers ultimately at the next level. Well, at the next level, you play against those guys every single day. So it's not like, hey, there's one or two games a year where we're really going to be tested by the secondary of the opponent. Like, that's every Sunday in the NFL. So I think for most guys, you can't just come out there and think you're going to out-athlete an NFL cornerback. So technique, I think, is ultra important. I don't think Harrison's going to be available. I think he's a fabulous player. I think he's more of an angular guy on the edge. You're not going to move him into the slot. I mean, you put him out on the edge and let him be an athlete and go up and get it and run past guys and just be big and physical. I think Neighbors is a guy that can play outside and inside and can do a lot of that, you know, quick twitch stuff. And I think Adunze can do a little bit of both as well, but he's a big body guy as well, 6'3 and well over 200 pounds. So all three of those guys have tremendous physical attributes. I think they all play the position in a really fundamentally sound way. I think you can find guys later in the draft that can do it too. You know, I mean, I think the other kid at LSU, his name escapes me, is a big, strong player too, that, you know, is going to be playing for somebody. You know, I think maybe late first round, maybe second round. And there are a ton of guys. Like, look at the best receivers in the league now. You don't have to be a top five pick. So, but I think at the next level, beyond just being a good athlete, you got to be sound fundamentally. And I think that goes for every position, though. I think you talk to an offensive tackle. If, you know, you can be a mauler, you can be a great athlete, but if your technique isn't sound, that guy across from you is Myles Garrett. And, you know what I mean? He's going to get the best of you. And even a midline pass rusher at the NFL level is going to be as good or better than anyone you faced at the collegiate level. So you just got to come in and work and make sure that you don't take anything for granted. But again, I think you can say that for all positions.
With the Bears being so locked in there at Caleb Williams Pro Day, somebody snapped a picture of him leaving the airport. It was like, all right, we're rolling everybody out to go see what Caleb's got. I hope they're taking a nice long look at Brendan Rice as well, who's also having his Pro Day out there with USC. Because I think, listen, if you get an opportunity to get a guy in the second, third round who's already played with the quarterback that you're expected to draft, he's going to understand the tendencies already. He's going to understand how the ball comes off his hand. He's going to have a little bit of a head start on even some of the pro receivers coming in here, because I've been catching footballs from this guy for the last 2 years. And he's Jerry Rice's kid. I'm not going to lie.
He's been the best receiver coach in the history of the game, too, at home. So, I think you make a really good point. I think that, the problem the Bears have at the moment is they just don't have the currency. They're sitting on 4 picks at the moment. And we've had the discussion quite a bit. What do you do at 9? Look, if one of these receivers is there at 9, I will draft him. So Walt, offensive tackle, I think, from Notre Dame is there. I'm not moving down. If you feel like you've got a difference maker at defensive end or offensive tackle or wide receiver, I don't move out of the pick. But if for whatever reason you're not sold on someone at 9, I'm sure you can still find a dance partner and move back and, reacquire some of that draft currency.
I think what's tough here, let me ask you this. There's going to be players there that you can be sold on for sure because of – no matter how the top board, there's only so many teams that can take players. Dallas Turner may end up falling. I don't know if he will, but he may, right? But if you can get an answer on your offensive line for 10 years, do you take that maybe over the premier wide receiver? Because I think that's how people are talking about Joe Alt. I think that's how people are talking about Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. And yeah, maybe 9 is a little high to take a center. Until you know that you've got a center that what Justin didn't have last year can snap and block. I don't think I'm asking too much from my center position to snap it and block.
Yeah, that should be a prerequisite, right? Don't hit it. Don't hit me in the ankles with the snap every time. I think you make a good point. I think if you told me that Joe Alt is going to be a 7, 8, 9 time Pro Bowler at left tackle and not have to, make a serious adjustment at the next level, you could sell me on it. I think it comes down, I can find a difference maker at the offensive line. I can find a difference maker at the wide receiver who's better at their job. And that's where I go because I've got, if I've got the choice. So who's better at their job? I don't even think you still need a wide receiver because think about it. Keenan Allen, I don't think you give up a fourth round pick and bring him in if you're not intent on signing him to a contract extension. My guess is that they're going to at some point come to terms on maybe a 2-year contract extension. At the very least, he'll be in Chicago for 2 years. Then what? Well, at that point, if you've drafted the receiver, then that guy just settles right in as being the number 2 guy. So, I can make a strong case for bringing in a wide receiver. Yep. I don't know how – look, I think Braxton Jones is a nice player. Do I ever think he's going to be a multi-time Pro Bowler? I don't know. I'm not an offensive line expert, but my guess would be no. And if you want to sell me on this kid is as good as at left tackle as we've seen in the last several years, I'm not going to be stomping my feet and pounding the table if they come out of this draft with an offensive left tackle that everyone feels great about. That's a bonus.
Yeah, I think that no matter what, 1 and 9 is going to be very fun for us this year. I don't think there's any surprise players that last year a lot of people were like, oh, you didn't take the nose tackle that you needed. He ends up going to Philly. You go out and get a right tackle. And it's like, well, the right tackle is pretty freaking good. I'm happy with that. But, there was a little bit of upsetness with that. I don't think this year they could go anywhere, and I'd be like, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
I think that they're probably a year or so away from being able to. I love Ryan Poles' approach. And people got pissed, if you remember, in his first draft. Everyone was like, we need receivers. And with his first 2 second-round picks, he drafted Brisker and Gordon.
Yes.
Everyone was pissed. George Pickens was available. This guy was available. Well, Ryan Poles came into the Bears, and when he interviewed, he obviously gave them a game plan. This is how I'm going to GM. If I'm ownership, if I'm George McCaskey, if I'm sold, this is how I'm going to GM. And then on my first draft, I basically go, well, I'm not going to take the highest rated player on the board right now. I thought we could do like that would have pissed me off, not draft. Yeah. And if you got to stick to your principles, and over the course of several years, your principles and sticking to your principles doesn't equate to victories, then you're going to lose your job. Yeah. But I don't want you coming in and with a set of principles and then deviate from them at the very beginning. So I liked what he did while everyone was killing him for not drafting George Pickens. I thought he stuck to his guns and said, these were the best two players that we had on our board. We've got plenty of needs in our secondary. We're going to draft these guys. I think that as you become a more talented and a deeper roster, you can adhere to your principles, but you can stray a little bit because when your roster's better, then you can start drafting on positions of need, not so much the highest rated player on your board, if you know what I'm saying. So like this year you get that wide receiver, you get that offensive tackle, and maybe you sign a rush pass rusher at some point that, you know, middle of the line guy, but helps you, whatever the case may be. Well, when you get to the 2025 draft, when your roster is more secure, then maybe when everyone says, hey, who's the highest rated player on your board? And you're like, well, this is this guard out of Wisconsin. We're picking 23. And Ryan Poles goes, well, our highest rated guy was this guy, but we really saw something from this pass rusher from LSU, and we took him because we had a need there. Like, that's where I think you can deviate from the plan and start drafting with regard to need versus best player available when your roster has been fortified over the course of several years. And I think they're in the process of doing that.
Yeah, I'm not the only thing about the Pickens thing that hurts a little bit more is right after that you go Velus. That's the only thing. That's the only thing that stings a little bit.
Well, listen, I'm not saying that all the decisions are the right decisions, but the process is correct. If the process is correct, you're not going to hit on all of them. But yeah, that one will say. Look, I think that
he's got to have naked pictures on somebody up there. I don't get it.
I don't know what it is either. Like, you know, you can't be great at evaluating every position. And we talk like he's got a blind spot a little bit, I think, or they do up in the building for wide receivers, whether it's Velus Jones or Chase Claypool. What they have done, I think, is maybe noticed that they have some of those issues. So they eliminated the risk by DJ Moore. That trade isn't made unless DJ Moore's part of it. And you've heard Ryan Poles say that. And that was a great decision on his behalf. And then you trade a fourth round pick for a guy who, you know, is a 6-time Pro Bowler. And I mean, I don't have to explain why he's so good to anybody. So you eliminate some of that risk. And I think that, you know, there is some self-awareness that has to go on in all walks of life.
And I respect it. I respect that he's got it. Like, it's just like, listen, we're on Velus and Tyler. Maybe there's still some hope for Tyler, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
like. And you got to be willing to listen. It's some, and I think it's hard for a young GM because you want to stick to your guns because, you know, a guy like Howie Roseman or Eric DaCosta in Baltimore, you know, the guy in Kansas City, you know, Brett Veach, like you got skins on the wall. You can make those mistakes and you do your job a little more freely. When you're first time GM, I think sometimes you probably are inclined to stick with guys a little bit longer to say, hey, I couldn't have been, maybe I was wrong on this guy, but I'm going to give him one more chance. And I think that Ryan has done a really nice job kind of pivoting sooner rather than later, especially for a young GM. But we'll see what the receiver room looks like this year. If it includes Velus, maybe we're going to have to revisit this conversation.
That's Velus wide receiver 3, baby. We might be in trouble. Nice. Tommy, we appreciate you coming on the show. Make sure to tune in to Waddle on Waddle and Sylvie every day on ESPN 1000. Any nuggets before we let you go, Tommy? Anything that you really want to see the Bears do?
I just think what I would say is look, this has been a difficult time, a difficult transition for a lot of Bears fans. There's been a lot of consternation. There's been a lot of nastiness. There's been a lack of civility. I said this a bunch, Pat, last week. Look, at the end of the day, I think if you're a Bears fan, all we want is a team that competes for a championship each and every year. How they get there, we may disagree. But at the end of the day, we're all pulling on the same end of the rope. So I think that time will heal some of these wounds for many, but I'm excited about the future of this team. I think that the infrastructure is there for a young quarterback who will step into a nice situation. And I think 2024 should be a lot of fun. Be a roller coaster like every season, but I have some pretty high expectations.
As an athlete, does it irritate you when like Joe from Schaumburg on Twitter is just like struggling to walk up the stairs in his profile picture? And he's like, nah, I just think that 40 times not high enough. I don't know, man. I don't think he's got the hands for it.
I got to tell you, I try to stay away from it as much as you can. I mean, but you are a human being. The ones that just get me or, you know, you call me a coward for my opinion, or I look like I need to get, some guy was talking about, I need to get in the weight room. Have you ever seen the inside of the weight room? I was like, yeah, I've been in the inside of the gym. You know, some dude asked me or said, you don't like being attacked, do you? And I was like, my friend, attacked is when Benny Blades hits you from the blind side while Ray Crockett's got his helmet and your chest plate. Not some silliness on Twitter. Okay. So I try to not to swim in that cesspool, but every now and again, my friend, it's so hard.
It's the best place to get Adam Schefter's updates. That's the problem. Like, I can't leave it.
You nailed it. It's the greatest place in the world to gather information and disseminate information. And it's the worst place in the world to actually exchange ideas and have a conversation.
Absolutely. Tommy, thank you for coming on the show. Anytime. For you guys out there, hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Y'all leave Tommy alone on Twitter, man. I saw the guy that was like, hey, do you even lift, bro? It was like,
you saw that.
Sir.
I don't anymore because I'm 57 years old. I can't get my arms over my head.
Yeah, there's some NFL injuries that went into that. Stay safe out there, Chicago. Peace.